and a greeting in the name of the one who said, "Peace I leave with you, my peace I give unto you. Not as the world giveth, give I unto you. Let not your heart be troubled, neither let it be afraid." I woke up this morning early with that verse. It just came to my mind, and I was meditating on that verse. And then I thought of a billboard that we saw last evening as we were traveling down here. It was a billboard that was put out by an insurance company. And the billboard said, "Hope for the best, insure for the worst." And I was meditating on that this morning, and I was thinking, well, you know, the peace that the world would give us, I guess, would be to insure ourselves to the hilt and hopefully get some peace of mind through that. But the peace that Jesus gives us this morning, I think of more as an assurance than an insurance. Assurance of salvation. Assurance that our name is written in the book of life in heaven. I mean, how can you compare that kind of assurance with the insurance or the peace that the world wants to give us? So I wish that for every one of you this morning. I wish that peace, that assurance in Christ, because of Christ, in Christ. Appreciated the song service this morning, and maybe for just a little bit, a brief introduction, along with what Brother Dale shared already. We currently are living in Flemingsburg, Kentucky, which is northern Kentucky. Our oldest daughter lives there, and we have 7 grandchildren there, so we are enjoying them. We lived in California for 15 or 16 years, and just last June moved in temporarily to help care for my wife's parents, who are both in their 90s and can't live by themselves anymore. They live in southern Kentucky, about 2 hours northwest of here, just north of Clarksville, Tennessee. And so we are helping care for them. 2 of my wife's siblings and us are taking turns helping care for them. So Lord willing, tomorrow our turn starts again for 5 days, and we look forward to that. So Brother Dale asked me if I would come share a few thoughts this morning with the congregation here concerning the work that I'm somewhat involved with, or I'm getting involved with, or have been a little bit with the work in India. And I'll be sharing, Lord willing, I'll be sharing some of that with you this morning. I'd like to invite you first, though, to turn to Luke 16 for a few thoughts. I'm not going to spend a lot of time in this account there. It's a very familiar account to you, I'm sure. The account of the rich man and Lazarus, starting in verse 19. Luke 16, verse 19. Just like to draw a few thoughts from this morning as a challenge for us. It's a challenge for myself and a excuse me, leave that challenge with you as well. Starting in verse 19, I'd like to read 3 verses. I'm not going to read the whole account. I'm sure you're very familiar with this account. But I'd like to look at 3 verses, 19, 20, and 21. "There was a certain rich man which was clothed in purple and fine linen and fared sumptuously every day." I'm not sure how we would put that last phrase into our modern English today or how we would say it, but faring sumptuously. I think it's talking about a lifestyle. I take it to mean it's a lifestyle. Verse 20, "And there was a certain beggar named Lazarus, which was laid at his gate full of sores, and desiring to be fed with the crumbs which fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, the dogs came and licked his sores." So the question this morning is, who in our modern world in 2024 this morning, who would we say would be the rich man? Where do we see the rich man with the kind of lifestyle that it says there? I admit that I guess I used to think that that was the millionaires, the billionaires. That was the exceedingly rich people in our society today. But last year in April, I think it was around about this time in April that I came home from my first trip to India. I never thought I don't remember ever thinking I'd ever end up going to India, but I was invited to go along to India to see some of the situations over there, that the needy people, some needy situations. And I have been in Central America quite a number of times in the last 30 years, been to South America a couple of times. And I thought I had seen some poverty or some poor, needy people down there, some places. But I came home from India not sure that I ever had before seen such needy, needy people. And I came home especially convicted that I am certainly a certain rich man. I'm certainly a rich man. And I'm sorry, but I fare sumptuously every day. I don't know what to do about it. Anyway, I'd like to share just a little bit of that this morning and a little bit about the organization and to hopefully give you a little bit of a picture of what that you are considering as a brotherhood here. Brother Dale had shared that you had looked at that as a possibility of whether the Lord would have one or two or a couple of your brothers maybe getting involved. Where do I start? Where do I stop? One thing about India. In Acts 17, verse 16, it says, "Now while Paul waited for them at Athens, his spirit was stirred in him when he saw the city wholly given to idolatry." And I'm here to share this morning that from a spiritual perspective, India as a country, as a nation, as a society is wholly given to idolatry, just like Paul said about Athens. There are idol temples everywhere. The Hindu religion is, I think the population of India is I think 88% of the population is Hindu. And they seem to be, as a nation, they seem to be very proud of that. They protect that. They are very jealous of that. Seemingly, I think I read somewhere that 3% of the population is considered to be Christian, and I think that includes all of the flavors of Christianity, Catholics, a lot of Muslims. I'm not sure what the percentage anymore. Different areas of the country have a lot of Muslims, but I came home just overwhelmed with the amount of what I would call raw human suffering that is still prevalent in our world, in our modern medicated world today. And it was certainly an eye-opening experience. I don't have time to go into detail how it came about that I was invited to travel to India last year. I ended up going twice, once in April and again in September. I'm sure all of you are familiar with CAM, Christian Aid Ministries. I think it was around 6 or 7 years ago. I'm not sure if I'm going in the correct order or not here, but I understand about 7 years ago, something like that, the administrators of CAM, some of the upper administrators in the CAM organization, in administration, said at a meeting one time, one of them said, "You know, we get into all these needy places in the world, different countries, and we've all seen a lot of needy situations. Where would we say that is the neediest of the needy or the poorest of the poor, the most destitute of the destitute? Where would we say that that country is or those that people group is?" And they weren't quite sure. And so they decided amongst themselves to just kind of keep their eyes open for the next year or two, see if they could discover or find where would be the neediest. Where would they agree that the neediest situation, people, group, need, whatever is in the world. They didn't publicize that necessarily. They just kind of agreed amongst themselves that let's keep our eyes open for the next year or two and see what we find. So, I probably should have said this first, but SOHI, there's an organization started by an individual, a Mennonite man in East Central Georgia, by the name of Jonathan Barnhart. SOHI is an acronym meaning it stands for Seeds of Hope India. Jonathan Barnhart grew up in a poor home, he said. They had always had plenty to eat, he said, but they struggled a lot. And as Jonathan grew up, he started doing some construction work, got into that, and the Lord blessed his business. Apparently today he is, I think he's in his mid-50s. He is a large building contractor. He has a very successful business. I think it was back about 13 years ago or so, he started reaching out. I'm not sure all the details. I don't have time to tell you anyway, but he started reaching out to some needy situations in India. I don't know how he got started, but just on a personal level, I think he started reaching out to some children's homes and started some children's homes. He came alongside some Christian families that he heard about that were raising their children and were so poor that they could hardly raise their own family, and yet they kept finding or hearing of these destitute orphans that would have died if somebody wouldn't have taken them in. So they started taking some of these children in and raising them with their own family and could barely do so financially. And John came alongside those families It said, God bless you what you're doing. Could we assist you financially and support you to help you do maybe even more of this? And so that's what the children's homes in India look like. Not your typical orphanage or children's homes as a big institution, but Christian families raising their own children along with some of those homes are 25, 35 children that they are raising as a family, and it's a beautiful thing. That was one thing that Jonathan started doing, and then he learned of some needy widows. Maybe now is the point to say that in India, the culture, the Hindu culture, religion, I think is a very, very cruel religion. We all know that God has a heart, a special heart of compassion for widows and children, the fatherless and the widows. We know that. We see that in the Old and the New Testament. But for some reason, in the Hindu culture and religion, widows are considered pretty much a curse. And for many, many years, as hard as this is to believe, to wrap our minds around that, for many, many years, if a man died and left his widow behind, she would be burned alive when he was cremated. They always, I think, always cremate their dead, the Hindus. A public cremation, like we would gather at a funeral home for a funeral, they gather friends and family to witness the cremation. The body laid on top of some wood and just burned in public. And believe it or not, if you can believe this or not, the widows would be burned alive with their dead husbands. I know it's more than we can almost stomach, but during the time of British rule in India, along with international pressure, that practice was finally eradicated. It's finally banned. They're not allowed to do that anymore. But today, widows in India are still considered a curse. They are ostracized oftentimes, and as hard as it is to believe, the children many times just push mom aside and pretty much ignore her for the rest of her life. I know that is hard to believe. But then, unfortunately, there is also still a lot of leprosy in India. There are supposedly over 1,000 leprosy colonies still in India. And if you are already a cursed or a ostracized or whatever widow and you happen to get leprosy or have leprosy, you are considered the lowest of the low in India. And so Jonathan Barnhart, bless his heart, he heard somewhere that the administrators of CAM were going to keep their eyes open for some of the neediest, maybe find the neediest of the needy situations. So he calls CAM and he says, would you be interested in making a trip with me to India sometime? And they did. And the story goes that CAM came home from that trip to India with John Barnhart, convinced that they had found what they were looking for. Just a tremendous amount of suffering in those widow leper colonies. James 1:27 says, pure and undefiled religion before God and the Father is this, to visit the widows and the fatherless and to keep himself unspotted from the world. Now, can any of you children tell me, did I miss something or didn't I? Did I quote that verse correctly? Was there anything that I missed? Any of you children, can you think of? Or anyone? What, Brother Dale? In their affliction. I remember, Brother Dale, when I came home from that first trip to India, and somewhere along the line I came across that verse, and those three words jumped out at me. I guess I had never seen those before, hardly. I know I could have said them, memorized, I mean, by heart, but widows in their affliction took on a whole new meaning for me to see what those poor leper widows are suffering over there. Emotionally, spiritually, they have no hope. They are Hindus. They have no hope of a better life after this life. They have no hope for anything better in this life. And I'm specifically talking about lepers who are in the advanced stages of leprosy. I learned that leprosy is easily cured. I never would have guessed that. But it's a bacterial infection that if you contract leprosy, you can take a concoction of several antibiotics and it's easily curable. But many of these poor ladies, widows, and some men too, it's not all widows, but the men are not ostracized as much as the widows are. But years ago,
Medicine was not available as easily as it is today, and so their leprosy just kept progressing. And leprosy in its advanced stages will take off your fingers, your thumb, your toes, part of your foot, oftentimes part of your hand. In its advanced stages, it will disfigure your face. And it really is a terrible disease to have. And so there are lots and lots and lots and lots, thousands, I guess, and thousands of poor widows in these leper colonies in India. Suffering, just suffering, physically, emotionally, spiritually, no hope. And so I think that Sohai, when they chose that name, whenever that came about, Seeds of Hope India, I think is a very well-chosen name for what they are doing, their mission there. They are offering hope to a short window of opportunity to these widows in the last, probably the last several years of their life. Offering them the gospel of Jesus Christ and coming alongside and providing some food for them, food parcels and care packages, bandages, whatever they need. Many times their hands are infected and they're bandaged sometimes, not always, but I brought some pictures along. I'll just lay these in the back. You're welcome to look at these. Just I don't have time to talk much about that, but I forgot to look when I came up here the other day what time it is. I don't want to go over my time slot, so you just wave your hand at me when it's time to.
Don't worry about that.
Well, I'm going to try my best. The good part about the program that Sohai is doing, there are occasionally, not as often as everyone wishes, of course, but there are occasionally, periodically, there are those who respond to the gospel of Jesus Christ, and they are saved, those widows in their last years of their life. Most of these widows, I think almost all of these widows in their older age, are illiterate. They never learned to read or write. So you can't hand them a Bible, you can't hand them a Bible tract or whatever, because they can't read. And so Sohai has started distributing some audio Bibles. It's an MP3 player where the Bible is on there, the New Testament especially, I think. I know that is. In their local Oriya language, which is, there's lots of different languages, but the area where Sohai is ministering in, they recently were able to find an organization that puts the Bible and some Bible stories on there in their own language, and that was a big accomplishment. And the Hindus, they are so surprised. John said that the widows are so, a lot of these poor people are so surprised to hear God speaking their language. They didn't know that God knew their language. And they hear God speaking in their language. And it's a wonderful opportunity for them to listen to a Bible story. And I listened to the Bible story in English that's on there. Very blessed by how simple it is, how elementary it is. Those poor widows who have never had an opportunity to hear about the gospel, I think they have a wonderful opportunity in that Bible story, that 3-hour Bible story describing who Jesus is and He's your Savior if you respond to His love. And see that the Hindu culture, there's many, many gods in the Hindu religion, and every one of those gods is angry. And so somehow you have to appease Him. Believe it or not, there have been millions of children thrown into the river as a sacrifice, drowned for their gods in the past. I think it's still going on in some places in India. In desperation to appease their God's anger, sacrifice their children to the river. There is just so much idolatry. You just come home so overwhelmed with the darkness, the oppressive atmosphere in India with all the idolatry and all that. I forgot to say, if there's anyone who has questions, please raise your hand. Stop me and ask the question. Feel free to do that. I want it to be as informal as you want it to be, please. India is an interesting, interesting place. India, just in 2023, last year, they surpassed China in population. India is now the most populous nation or country in the world. I have some statistics here. The world's population is just over 8 billion people. The population of India is now 1.4 billion. India is one-third the size of the United States, but has a billion more people. And India's square mile, or the land, or the country of India is only, one-third the size of the United States, but has four times as many people. And so it is very, very, very heavily populated in many areas. I never saw such a mass of people in one location before. I just didn't know they existed. India has this dreadful, dreadful history of the caste system that has done such a tremendous amount of damage to the population. It's hard to describe. I think there's four different castes. They don't intermarry, not supposed to. Recently, in the recent years, legally now, if the law had been passed that it's no longer legal to have a caste system in India. But they said it's so deeply entrenched in their society, it will not for many, many years and maybe never, ever be eradicated because it's so deeply ingrained. India has, I don't know, I just don't have this time to share all this stuff, but Mumbai, India is, the population of Greater Mumbai, that would include the suburbs, has 27 million people. That's not the area that we were in, but just to give you a few statistics. Mumbai, India has around 200,000 homeless children on the streets. Often as many as 200 to 250 die during the night and are picked up by trucks in the morning. Mumbai has one of the largest populations of slums anywhere in the world. 60% of the people in Mumbai, now picture 60% of 27 million, live in slums. That's reflecting the caste system, remember. Ironically, Mumbai is also the city with the most billionaires in the world. The city with the most billionaires. Simply showing us how that as time goes on, the effects of that caste system, the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Excuse me. I could go on and on. But 500,000 villages in India today, 500,000 villages in India have no access to the gospel, and most of them are illiterate. They can't read as much as a gospel tract. It was just mind-boggling to me. And I saw, but even though I was only there twice, I only saw a tiny, tiny little slice of India, I'm sure. Okay, so Sohai, the mission of Sohai. Sohai was started, as I shared, and God blessed their work. God has blessed that work. They have grown. And after Cam found out about this situation there, Cam requested that they could, or would Sohai be willing to let them funnel some funds through their organization, because Cam was not set up to distribute aid or to operate in the country of India, and Sohai was. So Sohai agreed to do that, and they expanded their program. Today there's like 1,000 widows in their program and 275-some children, I think, that are supported. And most of their support comes from Cam, I think to the tune of like $60,000 a month that Cam is funneling through Sohai into the program there. There are currently no Americans serving there under Sohai. It is very, very difficult to get into India as an American, especially if they suspect that you are a missionary. They want no missionaries. So when you get a visa, it's easy to get a visa to get in, but you get a visa because status or whatever of you're a tourist and you're visiting friends. Those are two things that you can check legally and honestly. You go to look at their beautiful country. And you also visit friends, which both are true for those going over there. It is legally or it is not legal, I should say. They have laws in their country against conversions from one religion to another, and that goes either way. It doesn't matter if you're a Muslim, you're not supposed to become a Hindu. If you're a Hindu, you're not supposed to become a Muslim, Christian, whatever. You're not supposed to change religions. And if you are caught helping someone or doing that, then you go to jail. Many pastors have gone to jail in recent years simply because they were caught baptizing new members. And so in different states, it is more lenient or less lenient or strict. Some of the pastors have been taking their converts to a neighboring state for their baptism simply because it avoided them having to go to jail if they got caught. The state that we were working in, they said, has been relaxed in the recent year or two, so they are now trying to very discreetly have their own baptisms there. The church that group that Sohai works with is considered a Baptist organization. It reminded me a lot of the Russian Baptists that we got familiar with a little bit there in Sacramento, California. Very interesting. I was in a church service I'd love to tell you about, but I don't know. I just don't have time. The service lasted 4 hours, and it was hot. In India, it gets hot, hot. No air conditioning. They had some fans running until the power went off. Power goes off all the time, off and on. We sang for a whole hour. Very inspirational singing. Everybody sits on the floor. Men on one side, women on the other. Probably 200 and some people there. We sang for a whole hour and not one songbook. All the children, everyone was singing just by heart, by memory. I don't know how they do it. They cannot sing without clapping their hands, I don't think. I didn't see it one time there. They just have to clap their hands. We clapped our hands till our hands got sore, and we just, for a whole hour, we sat there. The service was so meaningful. They passed the offering. I have to share that. I have to tell you this. They passed the offering basket, similar to what we would maybe in America. But then there were also several ladies that were going up and down the crowd there, stepping. Yeah, you can't, I mean, you're sitting on the floor and you're crammed in there and it's hot. And so they go along with a little gunny bag about this big around, this tall, white gunny bag type bag, cloth bag. And I noticed they were going up and down and people were putting something in it. And I didn't know what it was. And so after they had gathered to the thing, they brought them up. We had to sit up on this front part there, and they brought up these gunny bags and just laid them there on the, set them there on the platform. So after the service was over, we couldn't wait, or I couldn't wait to find out, well, what's in these, what did they put in these gunny bags? Little pouches of something. They said, well, that's the poor people. If they don't have money to put in the offering bag, they want to bring something. So they put a little rice in a little bag or a little pouch of beans or lentils or something. All it looks like is a piece of cloth that they put something in and then they tie it at the top. And so they had two gunny bags almost full of offerings that were these little packs of rice. That's what the poor people bring as an offering to. Now, doesn't that sound biblical? They wanted to give something, but they didn't have any money. And here's what about sat me down. We asked the pastor then, well, who ends up with this food? Who ends up with this rice that was given? And he said, oh, that's for the poor people. I thought the poor people brought the rice as their offering. But no, that's for the people who don't have any rice. And there's apparently lots and lots of those there. Very, 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 very inspirational. Service lasted, like I said, for 4 hours, and it was hot. The last time, the part of the service, the power went off. But it was so inspirational. I would love to go back there. I wish I could take every one of you there for a service. I just came home so blessed. So rich, so rich, so filthy rich. I don't know if we would take a figure up how many dollars worth of vehicles, if we put the value of our vehicles together in the parking lot out here together, I don't know if we would want to know what that would total. I don't know if we want to know or not. But you know what the parking lot was filled with outside their church house? There was something like 200 pairs of sandals. That was all that was in their parking lot. Anyway, any questions? I need to bring this to the next part. But any questions at this point, feel free. Yes.
Can you get the disease, leprosy, from one another?
Good questions. Can you get leprosy from the lepers? It is possible. The workers there say it is possible, but they hardly ever do. They try to use common sense hygiene. Whenever we would go to the leper colony, they would pass out a squirt bottle with the, you know, your what we use here too, I guess, alcohol based. They say it is contractable, but it's not that easy, I guess.
For the ones that do very seldom get it, can easily be cured.
They can easily be cured if they get the treatment right away. If you don't get the treatment for a long time, well, then you will have effects that you can't reverse, of course. But good question, yes.
So once it's advanced to a certain point, then antibiotics and so forth cannot?
That's another good question that I don't have an answer for. I'm assuming you could stop the progression, but I don't know. I'm not sure. Good question, though. Anyone else? Okay, going to the next part and bring it to a close here. The first time I was over with John and I were on the bus one night, a whole night. We were on for 8 hours, traveling from one home to another. And during that night, he shared his heart with me, just shared that Sohai really needs some help. Sohai has not grown their administrative end of the organization as much as the support and the work over there. But he didn't go into a lot of detail. He just shared his heart, what some of the needs are. And then later, when I was asked to go back in September for the work project, John said he just can't be gone long that time, but would I be willing to go over and just to help with this and oversee this work project? And I said, well, okay, I will, but if I'm allowed to take another brother with me. So I asked another brother in Flemingsburg, Joe Peach is his name. He traveled over with me. We were there for several weeks, and it was a blessing. We did not get the work project finished. So John asked if we could go back, or somebody could go back in January to finish that. I didn't feel like I could go 3 times in 1 year's time. I just didn't, with the responsibilities we had, I just said, I just don't think I can. But he said he would wish that either Joe or myself could go, so there's overlap with the work project. Somebody's been there before and understand it. So Joe agreed to go again. It was his second trip. So he asked another brother to go with him. They were able to finish up that work project. That was a blessing. That was just this past January. Okay, so John Barnhart was wondering if Joe Peachy and myself would consider becoming a part of Sohai, become a board member specifically. And we weren't sure. We just did not know. We just talked about it a lot, prayed about it a lot, just weren't sure that we, with the way everything was set up, pretty loose jointed, pretty, I don't have a lot of time, but we just didn't know that we would be willing to do that. We just didn't quite feel clear. And then we basically gave him a no answer. Although we have interest in the work, we might still be interested in going helping some, but just to get officially involved. Well, that's when John came back then with a written request. Would you be willing to see if you could find a church or a group of churches, a couple of groups of churches, to just see if there'd be interest to put together maybe a whole new board? He would still want to be a part of it to a degree. He's willing, but he would like for someone else. Could it be possible that someone else could kind of take Sohai on? And so that's kind of where we're at right now. Joe Peachy and I have talked to several different brothers and several different churches. We talked to a couple of the ministry there in the Liberty churches. But they felt like they could not at this time take on anything new. They have so much going already. So that didn't work out. We talked to the ministry in Burkesville, Kentucky, brotherhood there. They had definitely have interest. I was talking to Brother Dale, or emailing to Brother Dale, just asking some counsel about the whole thing. And then he thought, well, maybe there would be a brother or two here that would be interested in becoming involved. And so that's the reason I'm here, I guess, this morning, is just to give you a little bit more of a picture of what Sohai is, what the request is. And I don't want anyone to make hard and fast conclusions about some things because my viewpoint is very limited. I've only been there with her twice. I'm not officially a part of SOHI. I'm just here to kind of help, I guess, see if we can honor John's request to see if there would be some brothers willing to look at this. And so, Lord willing, if everything works out on May the 25th, John has agreed he would love to meet with whoever has interest. And so we will hopefully be meeting somewhere in the Nashville areas. I'm not sure where yet. That's details we don't know about. John is just now coming back from a trip to India. I'm not even 100% sure that he's going to be available on the 25th, but I think he probably will be. And then whoever has interest can ask questions to someone who is officially or who has qualified to answer them, because my answers, I'm sure, aren't that accurate always. And I don't. Any other questions yet regarding anything I shared or especially about the request? Please speak free. Yes, John.
Do you know how these widows were being taken care of prior to Sohai's involvement? Was there any kind of family care or anything happening there? How was the same life, I guess?
I don't know. I really don't know. I think, if I understand correctly, that many of them die prematurely, not so much that they starve to death, maybe, as their health goes downhill because of malnutrition and the disease and all the germs. Hygiene in India is just incredibly lacking. It's just, they have open sewers running through town right outside your house. They have cholera, they have dengue, they have malaria, they have, I don't know what all, yellow fever. And there's no wonder that they have that. It's just, the hygiene is just so terrible over there in the poor areas. I'm sure there are plenty of places in India that it's not that way, but we weren't in those areas much. Or, good question. I'm not sure how to answer that. The passion that John has had and that Sohai has had is to come alongside, try to come alongside these suffering widows who are suffering so terribly, emotionally, physically, spiritually. They just have no hope. And their society, their families many times just push them aside. And there they are, just wasting away, basically. I recently sent a picture over. They found, the workers over there found this widow beside the road in a little stick. Somebody helped her put up a few sticks and put some plastic over it. Very, very primitive and crude. There they found her destitute. She had a daughter, but your daughter pushed her out. She doesn't want her to mess up her house, whatever house she had. Hard to believe that your daughter would push mom out there to die by herself. And so on an emergency basis, they took in this poor widow on the program. It's just, we've got to do something. Somebody has to do something. That's just like one little, she's not a leper, I don't think, but any other questions? The pictures you're welcome to have. I don't want them back. You can just pass them around and whoever wants to see them. And I don't know what the Lord wants to do from here.
Brother Myrtle, will you inform us exactly where that meeting will be when you find out?
As soon as I do, yes. I will.
Inform us, please.
Sure.
And we would like to have somebody there.
Sure. Thank you. I will try to do that, brother. Yes. Okay, I think I will quit with that. There is another trip tentatively being planned for July. I may be going myself and the brother that went with Joe the last time. And if it works out, if there is enough interest, and if I do go, if John wants me to go, if we do end up going, John would love to see another two or three brothers who have interest by that time, maybe, to also maybe accompany that trip and just see firsthand what the needs are, what Sohai is doing, and whether the Lord would have more people to become involved. Thank you much for your attention, and God bless each of you.